Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of The Occasionalists. Matt Pagel here, kicking off in the March of Minisodes with you, which means I am kicking off our first venture into daily podcasting. That's right. This is The Occasionalists Daily. From now on through the rest of this month, we will be having episodes every single weekday. So this is going to be an interesting sort of challenge, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun to kind of get out there and give you a new minisode every single day. I think it'll be a lot of fun. So anyway, we're kicking this off, and as I said on our last episode, our first official minisode, I said I'm going to kick everything off with a little fact of the day. Sometimes related, sometimes not, and in this case, this will not be related to the topic at hand. But however, on this day, March 4th, 1922, 1922 is the first vampire film, Nosferatu, an unauthorized adaptation of Bram Stoker's Dracula, premieres at the Berlin Zoological Garden in Germany. That's March 4th, 1922, so literally 102 years ago, we had our first vampire film, and a film, this film and other early German horror films, but this film especially, setting a very significant sort of visual language for horror movies that many horror movies, that horror movies still don't really, I shouldn't say they don't deviate from, but that that really kind of cast the die for certain visuals in horror movies. You know, this really was the template, the bar, however you want to look at it, the gold standard for a lot of visual stuff that we still do in horror movies today, and that started back in 1922, again, with the first vampire film, Nosferatu. All right, so excited to be here on this Monday with you as we get into this this daily kind of routine here. And as I mentioned before, this week we're going to be kicking off the daily challenge here with talking some sports. I think this is a really good way to kind of get into it. You know, you could talk sports. There's always something going on in the sports world. There's always some league is playing. There's something to talk about. So I think it's a good way to kick off, and we're going to be doing that with each day. We're going to talk. Each day we're going to talk about the problems that all of the various sports and leagues are facing. I'm going to try to find essentially two problems that I think, you know, a major problem, and then maybe like a less major problem in some cases, but nonetheless, two problems each that each league or sport collectively is facing. Once we get to Friday, we will have kind of like a twofer as we talk soccer and hockey. But we're going to kick off by talking about the NFL. Excuse me, my throat's a little sore. Talking about the NFL, and then we're going to talk about college football, baseball, basketball, and then, as I said, we're going to talk about soccer and hockey to wrap things up. I should say, when I talk about baseball and basketball, it's obviously the MLB and NBA there. So we're starting with the NFL. And I do want to. I'm going to start each episode too with talking about what the obvious problem is. We're just kind of briefly address it and say that, you know, here's what the obvious thing is. This is the thing that's kind of staring everyone in the face. And then, as I said, you know, as I mentioned before, then what we really want to dig into are the other issues, the things that aren't maybe as obvious to the average fan, or even some, you know, even some more astute fans. That's the kind of stuff that we want to talk about. So that's how we're going to do this every week, or excuse me, every day this week. We are going to give you the obvious problem, briefly address it, and then we're going to move into what the real problems I think are. So starting off, kicking off with the NFL, the obvious problem here, it's injuries, right? For a long time, it was head injuries, but it's injuries in general. And I think it's, my guess is the injury rate probably is higher than it was in the past, but I don't. My guess is it's not like wildly higher than it was in the past. I think it's just because of how many games are on TV, how integrated football is, the NFL is with social media, and all sports with social media, but especially the NFL is with social media. We're just more acutely aware of how often players are getting, you know, how many, especially star players, are getting injured. I think that's another key to it too. This past year and the past few seasons, it seems like more star players have been injured than ever before. Although, again, I think it's probably still in line with what happened in seasons past. It just seems like it's more out front than it was previously. And then, you know, that's why you had last year, you had like this big quarterback, or excuse me, the running back meeting with guys like Saquon Barkley and Nick Chubb and Derrick Henry. And I can't remember who else was on this like sort of Zoom call to talk about how their position really lags behind in terms of pay, while they're a position that takes on, you know, the most injury risk in football. You know, they are getting hit on every play. They are the ones who are being pursued on every single play, and oftentimes cut down from angles that they're not really expecting. I guess maybe not expecting is the right way to put it, but they're getting hit and taken down from angles in which they really can't defend themselves. You know, more so than a wide receiver. You know, obviously wide receivers can get tangled up and they can injure their knees, and that can always happen. But more often than not, they know where the contact and the impact is coming from, and they can kind of brace for it. Same with, offensive linemen or any, you take offensive and defensive linemen. You know, obviously you can get injured, and we've seen plenty of guys get their knees rolled up, and, you know, you've actually seen some gruesome ones because of that. It does happen, but generally speaking, since neither offensive or defensive linemen are sort of taking high-impact blows, they're usually amongst the players that can kind of just play through them or play through, you know, with a relatively lower injury risk. And the injuries that they do occur, because they're generally not high impact, they can kind of play through them a little bit more easily than some of the high impact and, you know, the more severe injuries that the position like a running back kind of gets involved in. So the injury risk is there. I just think it's more so that it's very, very obvious. You know, whether it's the head injury, the ongoing head injury stuff, the fact that certain positions aren't getting paid while taking on more of an injury risk than other positions. We even had, and this year we had the big deal with Aaron Rodgers tearing his Achilles, and the field at MetLife Stadium in New York, well, New Jersey, but you know, whatever, New York. You know, which has actually always been a place where the injury rate on that field is actually very statistical significantly. The injury rate at MetLife Field is statistically significant compared to other stadiums, especially grass stadiums. But even when you compare it against grass stadiums, the injury rate is higher. By a noticeable margin, and certainly when you compare it against other turf stadiums, the injury rate is, there's a definite like statistical difference that you can really see. So, yeah, injuries, number one thing. That's the number one thing with the NFL. So I don't think I need to beat that drum anymore at this point, and we'll get on into what I think is one of the bigger problems facing the NFL that maybe isn't being talked about the same way. Okay, so what is the first thing that I'm going to get into here? One of my first sort of big problem that is plaguing the NFL, and of course that is the most important position on the field, quarterback. That's where I'm going first, and it's the fact that quarterback play has gotten worse over the past few years. I know it seems kind of odd, but there are plenty of charts and articles and stories referencing this. I'm not the only one who has seen it. But certainly it really became a thing this year, and for very specific reasons, which we're going to touch on. But over the past like 5-6 seasons, when you just take the raw quarterback, the collective raw quarterback numbers across the NFL, and you'll see that, you know, the average yards per game, the average interceptions and touchdowns per game, all these stats have been on the decline or have, you know, gone in a bad direction the past 5 or 6 years. So it's something that is definitely noticeable. I suppose it's not to say that there aren't any good quarterbacks in the league, because certainly there are, but quarterback play this past season especially, but quarterback play in general has just not been as good as it has been in the past. And that's a big deal. This is the most important position on the field. And if this position is getting worse progressively, then that means that games are progressively going to get worse too. If you have and we've seen some games where, you know, this season where, you know, Tommy DeVito threw for like under 100 yards. As a Browns fan, we saw this is a very unfair assignment, but nonetheless, we saw Dorian Thompson-Robinson go out and really struggle against a Baltimore Ravens defense. You know, it's a good defense, but really looked overmatched. In fact, a couple of weeks after that, we saw the Browns play, I can't remember the Cardinals quarterbacks, Clayton Tune maybe, looked completely overmatched in that start. A lot of this, you know, so there's many reasons for this, but the bad quarterback play is a real thing that you can definitely chart and see that there's evidence for this, undeniable and obvious evidence for this, that there's a significant decline the past few seasons. Now, I think, as I said, this year was definitely a bad year collectively. I mean, even Patrick Mahomes had a much more human year than he's certainly used to. And, you know, prior to their Super Bowl run, we saw him in the regular season multiple times, thinking about that game against the Vegas Raiders, how bad he looked, just top to bottom, how bad he looked in that game. So, you know, it's, you don't want to, you know, just point to like the current best quarterback having a tougher than usual season and say, see, look, it's obvious that, you know, like if this guy's struggling, everyone's struggling. But you really can kind of pin that. You really can kind of pin it that, like, if, you know, if the best quarterback is struggling, then certainly lesser quarterbacks are struggling as well. And again, I've already hinted to it, so I'll just jump right into it. The biggest reason that we saw this year was the severe rash of quarterback injuries. I mean, the Browns played technically five quarterbacks, but, you know, Jeff Driscoll, that was in a meaningless game. Browns played four quarterbacks this season, and they definitely struck gold with Joe Flacco. But that just as easily could have gone a bad direction, and you know, would have doomed an otherwise all pro level Browns team, would have kept them out of the playoffs otherwise. You know, we saw multiple backup quarterbacks, not even backups to the backups play, you know, start multiple games. There just were so many injuries this year, and it shows you how thin the quarterback position is once you get past, you know, certainly the starters for every single team. But really, when you think about it, I've always maintained that there are, you know, there's obviously 32 NFL teams, but realistically speaking, there's 15 really good quarterbacks, and then there's 17 guys that, and then when you get to the next layer, there's 17 to 25 guys who probably, you know, who are kind of indistinguishable from each other. And then when you get past that, everyone is, unless there's a miracle, Tom Brady sitting somewhere on someone's bench, everyone beyond, say, like the top 40 quarterbacks in the NFL, if you will, beyond that, they're all kind of the same. They're all kind of the same level of bad. But it just goes to show you that possibly my sort of estimate that there's, you know, that the NFL is a league with that, you know, at this particular position that goes 15 deep with, you know, good players, and then 40 deep with adequate players. Maybe it's actually shorter than that. Maybe it's more like it's 10 deep with good players and 30 deep with adequate players, and then everyone else kind of sucks. But regardless, the QB crop, it's very, very thin. The talented QB crop is very, very thin, as we've seen. This year just really bared that out with all the quarterback injuries. Another thing that kind of goes along with this, with the quarterback, certainly, again, the injuries kind of exacerbated this, but this is also another trend that QBs, quarterbacks, are getting younger and younger and younger every year. And the younger the quarterback is, the less experience he is. The less experienced the quarterback is, the more prone to mistakes they are. And as the age of quarterbacks drops and drops and drops, obviously the experience level drops and drops and drops with it. We just don't have that many veteran quarterbacks the same way that we used to. And this is because, you know, in the last several seasons, we've had some of these gigantic names in the NFL in recent years. Obviously, Brady, Roethlisberger, Philip Rivers, you know, several years before that, even if you want to take it back a little farther than that, you know, Peyton Manning, Eli Manning. We've had all these, like big names retire from the sport. Andrew Luck. We've had all these big names retire from the sport that has kind of forced the hands of various teams to then go find quarterback replacements for all these players. So QBs are younger than ever, which, again, when you just don't have that kind of experience, you're just very likely to make mistakes. Kind of piggybacking off of that, you have these younger and younger quarterbacks whose, you know, most, you know, whose, you know, the bulk of their playing experience came in college. And while they're in college, they are definitely not being prepared for the NFL. The college game is, even though the college game and the pro game are probably closer in terms of playing style than they've ever been, the quarterback position might actually be farther away than it's ever been. You have QB, and it's not the responsibility of college programs necessarily to get their players NFL ready, obviously. It's the NFL coaching staff, it's the scouts and the NFL coaching staff's jobs to get college players NFL ready. But the offenses in college are so vastly different. They are so off schedule. Caleb Williams is probably going to be the number one overall pick in this upcoming draft. And so much of the stuff he does is completely 100% off schedule, meaning he is scrambling around and just kind of hoping that something, not hoping, scrambling around buying time until a pattern or route or someone, you know, breaks open or something along those lines, or someone is able to make a move to give him a window to throw through, or, a linebacker goes the wrong way and gives him a window to run through. That's what the offense almost is like predicated on. And I know that's not the only thing that happens, but it happens a lot more like that in college. The amount of off schedule plays that quarterbacks make are way higher in college than in the pros, where things are significantly more structured. Add to it, the quick passing game is nothing new to the NFL, but the amount of these passes, these screen passes, these bubble screens, these literally three-step drop ball out, to your first read kind of swing passes and tight end passes and wide receiver, long, shallow drags in the college game are something that sure you call screens and stuff in the NFL, but boy, the amount of them they get called in college it's wildly different. So in college, you don't have a quarterback that's going to drop back five steps, set in the pocket, read the linebackers, read the secondary, see where players are moving, anticipate this. It's just in college, it is much more one, two steps, balls out to where the coaches tell you it's going to go out, regardless of what is happening, what actually might be happening on the play. So while the college game and the pro game have kind of moved closer in general concepts, the importance of the quarterback position, I think, has taken steps farther and farther away. In the NFL, they're asking the quarterback to do so much more, process so much more, think so much quicker. And in college, coaches are saying, we want you to think less. We want you. And by the way, this isn't a remark on the intelligence of college quarterbacks or any quarterbacks in general, but just what the coaches want out of their quarterbacks in college is significantly different. They're going to take things off of the quarterbacks played in college versus giving them more things to think about, which is what happens in the NFL. And then lastly here, this also piggybacks off the young QBs kind of thing. Quarterback spending, even though players like Mahomes, Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, Lamar, Deshaun Watson are making boatloads of money, there really is a very kind of skewed spectrum as to how teams are building their, how franchises are building their teams and what they're willing to pay for those teams. The most obvious example of this is how the 49ers are built, right? They're paying a lot of money for their skill position players, for their defense. They're paying a lot of money to George Kittle and Debo. They're paying a lot of money to Christian McCaffrey. They're paying a lot of money to Chase Young, who they just picked up, to Bosa. They're Fred Warner, their great defensive backfield. They're paying a lot of money to those players. And they're getting those, they're able to pay that money to those players because Brock Purdy is making literally the lowest that you could make on like a league minimum. And a lot more teams are taking this approach, where you build the team up first and then you draft a quarterback, you know, be it in the first or second round, maybe even third or fourth round, whatever. You draft a quarterback and then you don't have to pay them for 4 or 5 seasons. You know, if they're any good, you don't have to pay them. And this is part of the reason for this is that obviously there's a high bust rate with quarterbacks, but even if they're good, you still don't have to pay them as though they were Burrow or Mahomes or Allen or whatever. You just don't have to pay them again. You don't have to pay them for at least like 4 or 5 years, or at least the payments don't have to get severe for 4 or 5 years. So you can keep a quarterback, you know, maybe they're making more than Brock Purdy, but you can still keep a quarterback who's really good. If you draft him as, you know, if you draft him, or I don't know, if you sign him as a free agent, that would be a hell of a story right there. But if they're good, you can keep them on a very, very manageable salary scale for a while, pay them more like you're paying, you know, even like a star running back, which is much more reasonable than some of the money that these NFL quarterbacks are making. And then thus you're able to more fully build a team around them. So, you know, when you do only have that quarterback spending going, you know, when the big money quarterbacks are truly the 1% of the 1% in the NFL, it just opens up the window for there's, you know, teams taking chances on so many more rookies, on so many more lower salary players at that position, thinking that they might be able to squeeze a little bit more out of it. And given all the factors that I just named previously in this very long rant, it doesn't work for every team. It works for the 49ers because, as it turns out, Brock Purdy is significantly better than your typical Mr. Irrelevant. You know, take if you were to go, I'm trying to think of another example of this, you know, C.J. Stroud, the number 2 overall pick. Obviously, he's making a lot of money as the number 2 overall pick, but he is not even touching Patrick Mahomes money or Josh Allen money or Lamar Jackson money. So, you know, more teams are willing to take that chance on a young guy. And when you just, again, to reiterate all these points I just made, you know, the college quarterback position not being very far away from the NFL quarterback position, the lack of experience in the young QBs, truly the fact that there really aren't that many talented quarterbacks in the league in general. So when you're going for someone who is not commanding that kind of money, more than likely they're not commanding that kind of money because they're not that good. So this definitely is as big of an issue as injuries, head injuries, knee injuries? No, of course not. But this definitely, we're moving to a point in the NFL where once more and more of these veteran quarterbacks retire in the coming years, we're really going to see exactly how wide the gap is between Mahomes and Allen, Burrow, who else am I missing on here? Even Brock Purdy. We're going to see how wide that gap truly is in the coming seasons as more of these otherwise veteran QBs retire. You know, the ones who are competent or, you know, even pretty good. Obviously, Aaron Rodgers, no idea what's going to be with what Aaron Rodgers is going to look like in the coming seasons. But, you know, once he's retired, we're really going to, the blinds will have been completely drawn on the last era of like all these great quarterbacks, and we'll be in this new era of what I think is really like a top three or so, and then kind of everyone else at the same level. But anyway, that's the first problem that I think is really plaguing the NFL. All right, our next problem plaguing the NFL, and this will be a little bit shorter than that screed I just went on, but the next problem plaguing the NFL, it's a very obvious one, and it's tackling. Tackling is absolutely atrocious in the NFL, and it's not necessarily just an NFL problem. This is a problem that the reason why tackling is so atrocious is that it goes all the way down to middle school. And probably, for that matter, all the way down to peewee. We are not teaching kids fundamental tackling anymore. Part of it is the idea that we want to avoid injury risks. And I get that. You don't want your players in practice necessarily beating the crap out of your players in practice. However, there are ways to practice tackling without killing your players. And I just don't feel like this is something that happens the way that it needs to happen. Because the fundamental changes in tackling at the NFL level need to start when kids are like 10, 12, 13 years old, in that age range. because by the time they get to high school, especially if they're playing higher level high school, if they're not good tacklers but they're still good athletes, trust me, you're not going to suddenly coach kids into becoming great tacklers. It's not just the – I know that the tackling in the NFL – defense in the NFL is harder to play than it's ever been, right? You can't get hit guys high. You can't really hit them low anymore. Or at least that's going to become the next thing. They're going to be watching out more for players' knees, which they should. We've seen some. I don't want to call them. Thinking about the Nick Chubb injury. I don't want to call that a dirty hit, but I think of that as being like a dangerous hit, where the outcome is almost certainly going to be one thing when you essentially barrel roll through someone who's kind of been stood up and can't defend their lower leg. That's the outcome more likely than not is going to be dangerous. I don't think it's dirty exactly. I just think it's sort of like, okay, well, you knew that the outcome could be this. Same with the tackle that I'm sure is going to be outlawed next year, the hip drop tackle, where players, from behind they grab. And this is especially true with like a bigger offensive player when a smaller defensive player is trying to tackle a bigger offensive player. They grab from behind and they essentially almost drop their legs out and drop their weight against the hip of the offensive player. And it causes the offensive player who cannot defend themselves in this position. It causes them to kind of fall backwards against their own momentum if they're running forward. And then the player who's doing the tackling, often a 200-plus pound man, to fall into the back of their legs as they're running. We saw it happen with Mark Andrews. I think this was like the Logan Wilson game where Logan Wilson got like three hip drop tackles, broke Mark Andrews' leg, sprained someone else's ankle. Is it a dirty play? No, I don't think it's a dirty play. It's not meant to injure someone. Is it a dangerous play? Yes, it's a dangerous play. And part of the problem is that guys do not know how to tackle. There's a reason. Watch some of the I cannot remember the player who was suspended for the remainder of the season. Oh gosh, Kareem Jackson. Watch all the hits that Kareem Jackson leveled. He's he's like a 12, 13 year pro, and he when he first came up in the NFL, the higher hits, the shoulder and up hits, were not exactly illegal, and now they obviously are. But you see him come in on every single tackle, just launching his skull and forearm into other players. And he even said when he had a meeting with Roger Goodell, he even said like, well, how am I supposed to tackle? I've always been tackling like this. And he's not lying. He has always tackled like that. The problem is that's not how you fucking teach tackling, or you shouldn't be. You should be teaching how to wrap up and drive through. I understand that that's not the reality on every single tackle or whatever, but there are a lot of guys, especially defensive backs and some linebackers, are really all they're doing is going for the hit instead of going for the form tackle, and that's what's, injuries are a problem. This is part of the reason why guys are very unsafely tackling each other. They either are going super high or they're going super low. They're not going right at the breadbasket, wrapping up and driving their bodies through. Certainly it's much harder when you're trying to tackle like a 260 pound tight end. But if you are making the attempt, I can tell you right now, if you are making the attempt to do a full sort of more of a rugby style tackle where you are putting your shoulder into the, head to the side, shoulder across the body, wrapping the arms up. I can almost guarantee you if you try to do that, you will almost never, ever strike a player too high or too low, because it's really hard to tackle up high like that, and it's really hard to tackle down low like that. The easiest spot to form tackle someone is across their midsection where you have more to grab. And you have more to push yourself into, and you have more to drive yourself against. I think if one teams, again, kids need to at the lower level, it doesn't matter. Tackle the sled, tackle the pads, get used to that form, and you'll be more used to it doing it in the games. I know that there's I know that there's some teams that have like automated dummies, automated tackling dummies that actually run routes and do stuff like that. That needs to be everywhere. That needs to be standardized at lower levels. So you can essentially tackle every single practice without putting your offensive and defensive players at risk of injuring themselves. One thing that I would do and I would advocate for, especially at the high school level, have someone who's a rugby expert come in and explain tackling. Rugby players play with very minimal padding and safety equipment. You know, they have like sometimes essentially what amounts to like an old school style like leather football helmet that you know helps protect from incidental impacts and keeps their ears covered. But you know they're not wearing shoulder pads, they're not wearing thigh pads, and the injury rate in rugby, it's not that injuries don't happen in rugby, they're very different type of injuries. You're not getting the high impact concussion injuries. You're not getting the brutal knee injuries because you can't, in rugby, you can't tackle too high or too low. You have to tackle across the chest and the stomach and the hips and the waist. You have to tackle there. You have to wrap your arms around them. You have to pick up and drive to the ground. Like those are the rules. And it would do kids at a much younger level, much better if they were getting these sort of tackling techniques down when they were 12, 13, 14, 15 years old versus just kind of letting it go to a point where, obviously I'm a big Browns fan, but I'm a big Denzel Ward fan. He went to my high school. I coached him when he was a little kid. And I see Denzel out there as a very, not a small guy, but, he's just like a 6'1", 180, 190-pound cornerback, defensive back, launching himself into people as though he were a 250-pound linebacker. And he's gotten concussions. He's gotten neck injuries because of this, because he's not doing the full wrap-up and tackle. I should have taught him better. I was coaching him in, like, T-ball, but it's neither here nor there. But, it's tackling is just atrocious. And the worse the tackling is, the more you're going to see injuries, guys diving at knees, guys diving at heads. The more you're going to see those kind of injuries, the more you're going to see defensive struggle. I think that's the biggest part. You're going to see more defensive struggle because your teams can't tackle. I mean, we saw it in that Tampa Bay playoff game against the Eagles. The Eagles looked like they had never fucking tackled anybody ever before. Those, especially in the secondary, players were running at them, and it was just sort of like flailing arms at them. It was incredible to see, actually. But that's the other big problem plaguing the NFL. Besides the quarterback play, the tackling is atrocious. And unfortunately, I don't think it's something that the NFL is going to necessarily cure on their own, especially with the, how minimal contact they have now, how the practices have changed, because of collective bargaining. I'm not saying that's a bad thing necessarily, but the impetus for change in the quality of tackling is going to have to happen at the youth level, certainly at least at the college level, but more than likely at the youth level, kids need to start learning how to tackle when they're much younger. And that's it. That's going to wrap up our first mini-sode for this week, Monday, March 4th. That's it. I didn't plan a little goodbye. So just thanks for downloading. Thanks for streaming. And we will catch you tomorrow.